everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers did it.
What did they do?
It's bad enough they made us wake up at 4:30 in the morning, but they also started Rajon Rondo for that game. It's just
it seemed
cruel
inevitable.
And unusual.
Yeah,
it's just
he played
cruel.
Well, man.
The cruelness is the point. You thought I all right, that was good Rondo, but it still wasn't like objectively good basketball, in my opinion.
No, but I mean, like, we don't have objectively good guards. I'm just saying, if like our guards named Rajon Rondo or anybody else give us that type of game from the one spot, mm-hmm. like I'll take it. You know, like defense had some issues on the defensive end, but he was not like hammered. Like, and part of it is, you know, they had him on like Joe Harris for certain stretches, who's like the 6'5", 6'6" type shooter, right?
Yeah.
And Rondo just doesn't have the size to be able to deal with that. But like, I don't know, like I'll take that game, man. Like, there are going to be plenty of games where I'm going to bitch and complain about Rondo. That's just not going to be one of them. I'll take that.
So today, as you guys can tell, I mean, obviously the week is thrown off, right? Today's show, or yesterday's show, by the time you guys are listening to this, was not a recap of the game, even though we technically recorded, or you guys listened to the show. A lot of you guys listened to the show after that game took place. But I still advise you guys to check out that conversation I had with Kyle. It was a great one. It was the newest part of our finals kind of preview series, this time with the Philadelphia 76ers. I had a blast recording that one. But today, Pete and I are going to react to this. We are going to try to remember, because I'm not going to lie, it's a little foggy.
Yeah, man, it's been a long day. I've been working on a video. Hopefully by the time folks listen to this, I'll have a video up about why the Lakers give up so many threes. This is something we were talking about recently,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a concern I have with this team. And that game, you know, I was saying, like, the bad version of this team is going to give up a lot of threes. There it was right there. That's exactly what I was talking about.
Here we are. Nostropodis. We are.
No.
We? No.
Nostropodis? Nostropedis, maybe?
Whoa, there. You swap out that D with an N, and it's a real weird prediction of the future. But so that's where I kind of wanted to start, is that is the bad version of the defense. That is kind of the concern with this team. I think Brooklyn shot 20 of 40 from deep.
Yeah.
And yet it was still close.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we supposed to do with that? Like, because I would argue if anybody hits three-pointers for the Lakers, they probably win that game handily despite the poor defense.
Absolutely. Look, my
God, that feels like deja vu.
Right. It absolutely does. And that is, like, my gripe over the last few years, and the roster's changed so much, so this is more an organizational thing at this point, is, like, why are we fighting uphill against math?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, our two best players are not great three-point shooters, although LeBron's jumper was falling in this game. Mm-hmm. They're okay three-point shooters, and we've done better to surround them with guys. But the discrepancy between the types of shots that we gave up versus the type of shots that we were getting behind the mm-hmm. three-point line, they're going to have to be so good from inside the arc in order to just make up that difference. And they almost did, right? Like, it's not – this isn't a hopeless thing by any means. And there are several things they can clean up with the exact personnel that they have. It's just a matter of this preseason and the beginning part of the season is going to be, how do they take those steps to be able to get there? And I think they have a few different options that are on the table.
We'll get to those options kind of as we go through the show. And to be clear, like, I'm not here, you know, yelling that the sky is falling or anything. They lost a preseason game. It was a weird preseason game, not just because Kyrie Irving steps off the court 1 minute into the game, having re-aggravated that facial fracture, it appeared, not just because of the amount of geopolitical pressure that you felt throughout the game, especially when the players and coaches weren't allowed to speak before or after. It was just a weird game. The Lakers gave up 50% shooting on 40 attempts to the opposing team. They were still in the game, and there were very clear ways for the Lakers to have come back and really, like I said, won handily. I don't have a problem with it overall. I just start to get a little nervous when some of the things that we are concerned about going into those games, when those concerns are confirmed, that's when I start to, you know, back off and say, okay, what can they actually do to solve some of this stuff? What can they actually, how can they actually address this stuff? So let's take a quick second. This is a shorter opening segment before we throw to longer second and third ones. And when we come back, I want to talk about how they are going to address that stuff, whether they can address that stuff. And we got to talk about Avery Bradley. Like eventually we got to have that conversation. So sit tight. We'll come back and we'll talk about that. Do you want to start with Avery Bradley, or do you want to start with what they could do to address some of those concerns?
Let's start with what they could do to address some of those concerns for continuity's sake, and then let's definitely get into Avery Bradley, though.
All right. So what's the first thing you say you think that the Lakers can do to not give up so many wide-open three-pointers? Because a lot of them were just, like, Joe Young should never be – it is Joe Young, right?
Joe Harris.
Joe Harris. Why am I thinking – who's Joe Young?
Joe Young played with the Pacers, and he was on the summer league team this summer.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Definitely who I was thinking of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. That's who you had him confused with.
But Joe Harris should never be as open as he was last night.
Yeah. Lakers got to bring their bigs up. At Media Day, and when I asked Vogel about kind of AD's defensive role with having some rim protection behind him, he had the same comment about how he's got a plan to keep their bigs in the paint. Mm-hmm. And we saw some of the downside of that today, right? If you've got KCP or Rondo trying to fight through screens on a bigger Joe Harris and Dwight or JaVale are at the free throw line, that's a clean look for a guy who shot 47% from three last year, right? So you got to bring your bigs up higher on that. That's one of the ways that you can combat that. Now, you are giving up, you are in danger of getting beaten off the dribble. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that this game showed me, last game to a lesser extent, but this game really made clear, is I thought Dwight would be the best fit at the five because of his ability to bang, and that's not what AD wanted to do prior to the preseason. Mm-hmm. From seeing these two games, it's clearly JaVale, and not just from a like athletic standpoint, but that athleticism allows JaVale to cover more ground.
Yeah.
JaVale can come up higher and still recover and be a rim protector, right? Dwight came up high on Harris coming off of a curl because you don't want Harris taking that, but then Harris beats him to the basket as a result of him coming up high, right? JaVale had several nice plays in that game, and Dwight's probably going to be similar to Boogie in the respect that against teams that are really built around their three-point shooting, he's going to be unplayable, or you really have to limit his minutes, you know, as a result of that. So that's something that, you know, it's an easy fix. I wonder if Vogel started Dwight in this game to get a feel for his mobility. Because, and I'm curious about this, Anthony. What's your take on like what you've seen from Dwight athletically? Because this is the first time we've seen him since really 2 years ago, because he only played in 9 games with the Wizards.
He looks tremendous. Right? He looks the part.
He's in great shape.
He's chiseled, he looks thinner and all of those things. But for some reason, that hasn't made its way into his game. Like, he doesn't have the same lift. His feet aren't moving the way that you would expect somebody who is built and looks the way that he looks to. You would expect those feet to be able to move. It really showed up, like you said last night, noted speed demon Joe Harris beating you to the bucket probably isn't the best sign. And look, it's just a matter of Dwight, even at his peak, he was not 7 feet tall. He's never been.
No, he has not shrunk. I can confirm that.
he has never been as big as people kind of think he is my point there. And JaVale is. JaVale is a legitimate 7-footer with a crazy wingspan and probably better feet at this point. So, yeah, frankly.
Yeah, JaVale's faster than Dwight. That's the thing that stood out to me with Dwight's athleticism is, like, yeah, he doesn't have the same type of lift. I thought he was had a little more in this game than before, and this is going to be a work in progress. But I've been a little surprised at how slow he is.
Yeah.
And that's been an issue on the defensive end, and he was caught in several circumstances where he just can't cover the same amount of distance that JaVale or obviously AD can, right? And so now Dwight is – I mean, Dwight was always a drop coverage type, you know, just protect the rim type of guy. Mm-hmm. But he could move when he wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't really see that anymore. So that's been interesting to kind of see where Dwight is at physically and reevaluate my initial impressions that maybe he should start at five. To me, it's clearly JaVale at this point.
The back thing, like the type of injury that Dwight is trying to come back from, mm-hmm. like it really shows, it really manifests itself in the way that he holds himself out there posture-wise. His head gets way out in front of his feet really easily. His posture out there isn't great, and I think that's because of he's still trying to get back from those things. And you know what? There's a chance that he never will fully get back to from where he came. He definitely won't be getting back to where he came from, but, you know, relatively speaking. I just think flat out JaVale's a better player right now than Dwight.
Yeah, you know, he is. And that I think that's been clear over the first couple of games. Now, in terms of other stuff that the Lakers can do, AD as – so if you've got to be in drop coverages or in coverages where you're not switching, even if you've got JaVale out there, you're usually not going to switch. I'm kind of curious – this is something that I have in my video. I'm curious of putting AD – on shooters, and this serves two purposes. If he's next to LeBron, LeBron doesn't close out to the three-point line. The purpose of putting AD on a weak side shooter, not a guy that's coming around screens, but on a spot-up guy, because if AD is on the weak side, he's the guy who's capable. That's the guy who's going to tag the roll man, right? So on a ball screen, the guy who the big hedges on the ball handler, right? And then that big who's doing that needs help. I'm talking about the defensive big, right? So the weak side wing is going to drop down and tag the roll man. If you've seen my videos, you've seen me cover this several times. So in order to prevent the lob, you know, the pick and roll pass to the big for the finish. But if that happens, if you go too far, then it's a skip pass to that weak side shooter. AD is somebody where he's just got that preternatural ability to cover distance that he can get in the way of that Jared Allen lob and still close out to the weak side shooter and contest that three if they choose to make that skip pass. So how often can you put Anthony Davis in situations where he's responsible for two on the weak side, right? And that's usually how most defensive coverages work, is if there's some advantage that's gained on a screen, you want the pass that's farthest away to be the one that's least defended. Because if you don't, something on the strong side is going to be open and it's an easy basket. So how often can you put AD in those situations where he's the one that has to do the superhuman thing because he's the one that's capable of doing superhuman things?
Yeah, I'm just nervous about asking him to be superhuman 82 games out of the year as often as they need him.
For sure. So when I say all of this stuff, I'm talking like long term, when we need to be at our best.
Yeah.
Do we know what our combinations are, what our different roles are, right? Now, yeah, does that mean that AD needs to be tagging the role guy and closing out all over the place for 82 games plus the second freaking game of the preseason? No. Yes. But it's just a matter of, like, we've got this new team, right? How do all the pieces fit together? So JaVale being able to hedge a little bit higher can help neutralize that Joe Harris who can come off of the screen. AD being able to tag the role man and cover so much distance on the weak side can help neutralize a lob threat like Jared Allen or weak side spot up shooters and come out to them, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of, like, figuring out, okay, if AD's not going to play the five for the whole game, like, what do those minutes with AD at the four look like? When are they most effective when he's at the four? Because what we saw in this game with Brooklyn was the version where it's at the worst, right? And it's not a result of AD. It's a result of the other guys not having the foot speed to cover territory.
I think this is also where Kuzma being healthy matters because he's now again – Kyle Kuzma isn't usually synonymous with fixed defense, but sure. That's not usually what you think of there. But he is longer than the other players that we're talking about here.
Foot speed too, and that's the big thing there.
Yeah, and so you combine those two things, and like for me, one of my favorite things to notice in a game is, holy crap, it looks like this team has a sixth person out there on defense, right? Where you're just like, they are flying around, they're on a string, whatever cliche you want to use there. And I don't think the Lakers right now have the personnel nor the understanding of their defensive concepts to be able to notice that about their defense consistently right now. And I think Kuzma being a little faster, being a little bit longer, if you aren't going to be able to, like, if your defense is going to be predicated partially on physicality versus quickness out there, what you need is length so that those passing lanes are a little bit more awkward or a little tougher to throw. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Kuzma helps in ways that the other perimeter guys on this team don't.
Yes.
I think you said there were a few ways that this could be addressed. Can I offer one up?
Yeah, please do.
Please stop getting beaten at the point of attack.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I understand wanting to set a tone, and this was actually one of my concerns from that first game was, okay, Avery Bradley wanted to set a tone. He wanted to be physical. He wanted to pick Steph up full court and show that, like, this is a new Lakers team. We're all, like, he was the pace setter, right? He was the horse that jumps out in front of everybody and sets the pace for the rest of the race as that thing goes along. You can't do that in the NBA. These guys are too good as ball handlers. And this was without Kyrie Irving, by the way. If Avery Bradley tries some of the stuff that he was trying against Steph or whatever, he's either going to foul out in every first quarter or he's going to get beaten so often that it puts the Lakers in a bad spot. And, you know, it's this thing that he's an all-NBA eye test type player, because you look at him, you're like, wow, this guy is trying his ass off. He's all up in the guy who has the ball. And then you look and you're like, wait, why is the team so much worse with him out there defensively, especially? And it's because for every possession that you see him knock somebody out of their rhythm with dribbling or knock the ball out of somebody's hands, there are like two or three other possessions where he just gets beat flat out, or he gets fouled, or he picks up a foul. And that's where, you know, I would prefer, if he's capable of this, I would prefer he focus more on containing the dribbler rather than making that dribbler's life a living hell.
Yeah, there's a balance. I mean, I do want ball pressure. I do want ball denial. I do want hard closeouts, which is another thing I was going to bring up, in that, you know, conceptually the idea of funneling guys, chasing guys off of the three-point line, funnel them to our bigs. That's one of the strengths of this team is the rim protection. Mm-hmm. So let's make sure that we're playing to our strengths. Bradley takes that idea to an extreme.
Yeah, to the end.
And the degree of ball pressure, it's not helpful. You mentioned the fouls. That gets your team in the penalty earlier on. You know, he's been pretty rough on the offensive end as well. He's somebody that, you know, they talked a lot about in camp. And like you said, he's a guy that, like, you look at him and you watch him and you're like, yeah. And that's something that gets very few things will get a bench as fired up as seeing a guy like really ball pressure someone and lock him up. Right. Everyone gets fired up at that. Right. But it's kind of like, it's
feels like fool's gold.
It's like a highlight. You know what I mean? It's like trying a low percentage pass for a lob that, like, when you complete it, everyone goes nuts. But it only works, you know, a couple times out of 10. And, you know, so I do think he should dial it back a little bit.
At least pick his spots.
He also has, like, that aggressiveness is used against him. So I was talking about tagging the role man. There were a couple of plays in the Brooklyn game where he was responsible for tagging, and he tagged too hard. And so he's late closing out to the shooter. It's an open look, and it's a bucket, right? And so just that aggressiveness, it's great, and it's easier to dial that back than to turn it up. But he's also deep enough into his career where it may be a little foolish of us to think, like, oh, yeah, he can just, you know, figure that out, and it's going to be all right.
Yeah, I do think it's a lot easier to tell somebody, even if their habit is to work too hard, it's a lot easier, like you said, to say to somebody, hey, you can actually be more effective by not trying as hard. Like, that's like my that's my dream come true. If somebody can tell me, Anthony, you could actually be lazy and be better at your job. Like, that's the American dream.
Well, sometimes it's like decision-making, like, it can inform or it impacts effort, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you make the wrong decision and you do it really hard, that might mean you're just going 50 miles an hour into the brick wall instead right. of 20 miles an hour into the brick wall, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I would describe Bradley's defense at times. And I don't want to act like he hasn't been a positive in some ways on the defensive end. It just hasn't been enough to justify his offense, and he's made mistakes on the defensive end as well.
Yeah, my dad always used to tell me, because I grew up playing golf, and when I started out driving him, he always used to point out the ones that went way far off. He said, well, the further off course you hit the ball, that means you're going to have to make that much better of a shot to get it back into play. So that's kind of where Bradley finds himself out there. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, I want to keep talking about – I want to get to some of the positives that we noticed in the game mm-hmm. because they were in this game despite some of these struggles. And I want to figure out why and whether that's something that can carry over to when they look better defensively against a team that it doesn't have Omari Spellman as their starting center. Like whether some of the stuff, some of those positives can carry over and lead to more consistent success. So let's get to that here in a second. So what was your favorite aspect of the game?
I mean, I'm still geeking out on Anthony Davis and just like the size and rebounding. I thought he passed the ball really well in that game. And, you know, for all of the, you know, discussing, you know, little things here that I didn't get to, just matching up in transition, they give up 3 points because they're like, you know, oh, we didn't pick up a guy, right? But for all of the mistakes they're making, just the pure talent between LeBron and AD is just so off the charts, man, that like, we're going to be all right. Like, we got to figure stuff like this out to a decent degree. I really like JaVale's game. I hadn't even looked. I just pulled up the box score. He led the team in plus minus, plus 11. He led the team in rebounding with 10 boards in 19 minutes, 5 blocks, 3 steals. That very much matched the tape. I thought JaVale was fantastic. And I'm really intrigued because I didn't like this combo conceptually, but now that I see it, I really like the like JaVale AD combo in reality, in that they're both so long and rangy and they can jump and just cover so much distance. I thought they were super fun. Caruso was not good in the second half, but I really liked the minutes that he got with the not the starters, but with that like
rotation
first
guys.
Group, right? The rotation guys. I thought he played really well in that first half before a quieter second half. I thought Rondo was solid. KCP can be a little crazy making, but his defense in terms of chasing shooters, I thought was really good. Danny Green did not shoot well, and I actually don't like how they're using him in terms of like he should be a spot up guy. And
yeah,
less
he's
on the move.
Floating too much. And
he should be more stationary than he is. But defensively, he really knows what he's doing, and that's going to be a positive, even if his jumper isn't falling. So yeah, man, a lot to still very much like it. But they just got to clean some stuff up.
Yeah, I walked away from that game delirious and exhausted and angry that like I wasted a night of sleep for that Avery could have given me. But like I walked away from it, I went to bed with about 9 minutes to go. Like it was garbage time, and yeah, the game was still close, and I guess it went down to the wire. I haven't rewatched it or whatever, but I walked away from it thinking, look, they are making their lives a lot harder by trying to fight against math. But if you are going to fight against math, this is the team to do it with. And I also feel like we're starting to see, so if you are going to play with the AD and JaVale as your front court, and obviously LeBron, we're really starting to find out, I think, what kind of players have to go around them. Like, again, not to beat a dead horse, but Rondo, I don't think, can be out there. Even Avery Bradley, if he isn't spacing the floor, probably shouldn't be out there. But given what we've seen from Caruso, we've yet to see, I don't think Quinn Cook played last night, right? So
no, he didn't.
So you know, I think what the Lakers need there is a floor spacer who's a solid defender. And again, you know, this is kind of a confirmation of what we thought with Caruso. I've really liked that he isn't just a meme. He isn't just a cult hero or whatever. He looked, yeah, I think he opened up those minutes playing with the rotation guys. Like, he was forcing things a little too much. He was playing ahead of himself. But I thought once he kind of sunk into the game and got into the rhythm of it, he looked perfectly. Like, he looked like he belonged, which is all that I really care to find out about with Caruso.
Yeah, in terms of that spot, that's fit. Starting spot where, let's say, JaVale is the front runner at the five. Mm-hmm. To me, it's between Caruso and KCP. Caruso had a rough second half in large part because he is not a scorer off of ball screens. Mm-mm. And like, he's really got that hole in his game. And he's got the guy that's going to end up with the ball in a lot of those situations and asked to do what he's least effective at. So he ended up 4-for-12, hit 3 out of his 4 threes. It's good to see the three ball kind of, you know,
yeah,
looking more still there, like a real thing. In the first half, I think he had like 3 points on 1-for-2 from behind the arc. 3 assists and 3 steals with some like just nice defensive plays, knowing where to be. So yeah, like the box score kind of belies Caruso's performance in that the first half was pretty good. If they want like a Bradley type of guy, go with KCP, in my opinion, yeah. Right? Because Avery Bradley is not a point guard any more than KCP is,
no.
But KCP provides some degree of offensive threat that just Bradley does not, while the downgrade, if there is a downgrade defensively, is not significant. Rondo was fine to me. I know I'll get some pushback on that, but that, like you said, that was one of the better versions of Rondo,
yeah,
you'll get. I still maintain that like AD had a couple of post-ups where like guys are just cheating so hard off of Rondo that he finished with the second most field goal attempts in the game because, mm-hmm, teams do not guard him.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're not going to lose because Rondo went for freaking 35, no matter how lightly we guard him. So like AD had like 2 guys on him in the post, just daring kickouts to Rondo. And he knocked down one of them.
Rondo was the person who threw the ball into him.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of the cardinal rules, right? You don't double off of the entry passer, but they totally did that.
Yeah.
So, like if there's a argument for Rondo, it's still what it's always been with that. Put him with that second unit with, yeah, AD coming out. And even then the rotations have been interesting in that AD has been playing the entire first quarter, mm-hmm, as opposed to, you know, like, does that last into the regular season? Right. And then, yeah, is it LeBron that's starting second quarter? So anyway, all of these things, we're second game. It's super fun to have basketball back and like totally overanalyze this stuff, but it'll be curious to see who gets that fifth spot.
My last point here on the game itself, and I think we'll end here on a question or two because I think we're still somehow behind. The way LeBron is carrying himself out there on the court has been interesting for me to watch, where he, like, somebody tweeted out, and I was thinking about it after I saw the tweet, but during the game, I've yet to see him, like, smile. Mm-hmm. Like, I've yet, it's just, and, you know, it's easy for that stuff that he said at Media Day, the whole, I am extra motivated. Mom told me to not talk about it, but, you know, I'm going to talk about it anyway. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier for that to be lip service than people can kind of realize. But, mm-hmm, I really think, and Jared Dudley noticed this, as he told somebody, I forget who he told that to. I wrote that article for Silver Screen, responding to Dudley's observation. But LeBron is out there setting a tone, and that's been really fun to watch, to see what that looks like and how that kind of carries over to the rest of the team. Because like last year, just to compare, I'd like your thoughts on this as well. I thought the team basically followed. There was a direct correlation between the state of mind LeBron was in, mm-hmm, and the, mm-hmm, state of mind that the Lakers played last year. And I think,
yes,
even though this is a veteran team and you might see a little less of that impact, you're still probably going to see a bit of a correlation there.
He's still LeBron James, bro. Everybody's, yeah, looking up to him, no veteran, rookie alike, right? That everyone, yeah, like, he's one of the all-time greats and people are going to follow his cue.
Yeah, so I really like the tone that he's setting with just his approach to playing basketball and carrying himself out there on the court. That's been really cool to see. Have you noticed that at all? Or
no, I have. I've been really pleased with his effort level. His defense has actually been pretty good. He's had a couple of mistakes here and there, but he's really shown, like, you know, we started this pod talking about the defensive end. Those 4-5 lineups with AD and LeBron, man, there's so much speed and power and dominance. And
again, there, wait till, like, Kuz is there too, because I think that's going to matter.
No, I do agree with that. I've just been the effort level, you know, like that play in that first game where he dove and tried to save it from going out of bounds. He's been making really good rotations, closing out hard to guys. He's still kind of will loaf sometimes in transition, and that burned the Lakers for a three or two in this Brooklyn game. But by and large, especially considering, you know, the mileage on him, this, he is so far backing up what he had been saying, you know, and he's missed a couple bunnies around the rim. I'm hoping that's not going to be a trend. That's something that sometimes you see as players get older, they get less elevation. They're just, they miss shots around the rim that they used to make. That's usually one of the first things to go. So I will be keeping an eye on that. But in terms of his approach, I've been very happy.
Yeah. Did you go back and rewatch it all, or are you still on the first watch of this game?
I'm on like three or four. Yeah.
I sent that DM to you about his free throws. Did you notice that at all with the way he's shooting his free throws? It looks better.
I've been working on this defensive video. So I usually will skip through the free throws. Yet, so no, I've not watched that closer, but I will.
That's also been nice to see. It's a different level of focus than he had last year. And some of that is like, that can be taken as a knock. It's meant a bit as a knock, right? Last year wasn't great from a focus standpoint, especially early in the year. And it's nice to see that he's kind of addressed that and rethought his approach to this. All right, let's end on a quick question here. We're still not going to catch all the way up, so we'll just answer an extra question or two in Sunday's show. But Saul the Kid writes, all right, hey guys, I got a few questions/points. One, pineapple does belong on pizza, so that's another vote my way. Pizza should be eaten with ranch. How do you feel about ranch with your pizza?
Who is this person? Who listens to the show?
I only have my pizza with ranch if I have jalapenos.
Do you do like ranch and pineapple? Like, I'm trying to figure out your guys' level of perversion.
Sometimes. Usually not, though. Like, usually, no. I've done it before, but it's mostly, if I'm having the pineapples on it, pineapples and ranch isn't a great combination. While we're on food pairings, ketchup on eggs is gross. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that.
Me too. Hot sauce is so much better.
Yeah.
Even just straight pepper. Like just some cracked pepper.
Absolutely. Hot sauce on most things. Like, I probably have some things that would make, you know, although I can't think of any at the time, but I put hot sauce on a lot of stuff.
Me too. Number four, now Lakers related question. Last summer, there was a lot of talk of the kids versus vets scrimmage that never really happened due to injuries, but how would a returning versus new Lakers scrimmage go? Caruso, KCP, Kuzma, Braun, and JaVale versus Cook, Bradley, Green, Anthony Davis, and Dwight.
Oh, Jesus. So Cook, Bradley, Green,
AD,
Anthony Davis, and Dwight. Mm-hmm. I think LeBron's team wins. The other team doesn't have enough ball handling on it.
Yeah.
Like AD can do some things for sure, but like there's no real great ball handler there. Quinn Cook's probably your best bet outside of AD.
Yeah, I probably agree. But it's close, though. This is going to make you laugh, but I've been taken aback at times at how good Davis is. Like, even I.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
that's a good point. Who's my big man again on the LeBron team?
JaVale.
JaVale. Okay, yeah, I still think they win. But yes, AD is just, yeah.
I prepared myself for this. I'd said, like, get ready. This guy's going to be a monster. And even still, I'm like, whoa. Every so often he does stuff.
You know what's going to be a super not fun thing that I think is probably going to happen this season is when people start talking about how AD is the best player on the Lakers and the LeBron-only fans who have migrated over to the Lakers take umbrage with that. And then there's this like unnecessary civil war on Twitter and other social media. Like, I am not looking forward to that because I think that's probably going to happen. That conversation is going to be brought up.
Man, Twitter. comparison is the thief of joy. Like, just let those two guys be really good. That's fun. Yes. It's fun that way. All right, this was fun. This whole week was fun. Having basketball back was great. This was I'm happy to have it back. I'm happy that everybody out there in China was safe for this game. This is a completely weird circumstance. I still stand by my initial thought that I didn't think that they probably should have played, but they did. They got out of there. They got one more to go, and then they're coming home. So I'm looking forward to getting them back stateside where we can put all this stuff behind us. Reminder, we have a ton of questions already. But if you have any topics that you want covered on the show, make sure you send them to us in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes. And I'll probably have to start just doing it like this, where if we have a couple minutes at the end of the show, we'll have to answer a question because we're getting so many of them. So thanks a ton to you guys who are picking up that weight for us. Have a great rest of your week. Your great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you on Monday.